Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, cleaning up after yesterday's storms. A funnel cloud spotted in Findlay, multiple listeners capturing photos and videos of at least one tornado on the ground in Hancock County. Officials say there is some damage, but we escaped the worst of it. Nearby Indian Lake devastated by a twister. Officials there say there are fatalities. We have coverage of all of it with the latest updates this morning. Also coming up, the Ottawa Glandorf Titans carrying the torch for our area headed into the regional finals of the OHSAA Boys Basketball Tournament, led by Mr. Basketball finalist and Ohio State commit Colin White. And get them before they're gone, a special collection of viral TikTok recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, March 15th, 2024. Obviously, with everything that transpired yesterday, I'm going to kind of play it by ear fast and loose with our original schedule for the program this morning. We had a couple of tornado warnings in Hancock County, one right after the other. First one right around 6:30, right around dinner time, and then the second one about an hour later. There were funnel clouds. There were tornadoes. Apparently confirmed. I mean, there are images and videos all over social media of people capturing the twisters in and around the area. Fortunately for us, unfortunately for those in other areas, we escaped the worst of it. Officials in Logan County are reporting there has been a loss of life connected with the storms. The Logan County Sheriff's Office has confirmed that there are fatalities in and around the Indian Lake area near Russell's Point and Lakeview. But officials have not said how many fatalities they have. It's quite possible they don't know yet. I know they've been working all night in and around the Indian Lake area. Authorities say mobile home parks were hit very hard by the storm, and given the resort nature of that area, there are a lot of mobile homes in and around Indian Lake, and that's never a good combination. The Red Cross has set up a shelter nearby. ODOT had plow crews out in the area overnight helping to remove debris from roadways so that crews could get to those who need rescues. There were reports of people trapped in their homes. The real extent of the damage still being assessed. It does say here in the report about five other injuries connected to the storms have been reported in Dark and Mercer counties. And in the Columbus area, AEP initially reported more than 12,000 power outages in their service area after storms moved through that region. And the number, as of this morning, has climbed to over 14,000 people without power, primarily in Delaware County. So it did not miss us by much, but we will continue to get the very latest information and bring it to you as we go through a very somber morning for a lot of folks this morning. We're coming up on the weekend. A lot of folks looking forward to the weekend, especially since it is St. Patrick's Day on Sunday. You know, we have been so tied up with the election and the eclipse coming up and so on. I almost forgot about St. Patrick's Day, but it is Sunday. Named, of course, for the patron saint of Ireland, March 17th is the day St. Patrick is believed to have died around 490 AD. There are many legends about St. Patrick, including that he drove the snakes out of Ireland and used the shamrock to explain the Trinity. Ireland, of course, came to celebrate his day with religious services and feasts, but American cities, especially those with large numbers of Irish immigrants, have really embraced the St. Patrick's Day tradition. The most extensive celebrations and elaborate parades are held in Boston, which held its first St. Patrick's Day parade in 1937. New York City, which first celebrated in 1762. And many other cities across the U.S. have joined in and added traditions of their own, including in Chicago, which has been dyeing its river green since 1962 to mark the holiday. I think they even dyed the river green during the pandemic year, didn't they? Nobody was able to go out and see it, but they did actually dye the river green. Even though it's all about the Irish, modern day celebrations are very uniquely American, and it is celebrated more extensively in this country than it is in Ireland. Wallet Hub says this year over $5 billion will be spent on St. Patrick's Day. Billion with a B, as in big bucks. $5 billion. Over half of Americans plan to take part in the festivities, and those individuals will be consuming a lot of beer, particularly Guinness. Over 13 million pints of the Irish stout will be downed on Sunday worldwide alone. Just on that one day, 13 million pints. That's a pretty good business. Guinness, I could keep Guinness in business even if they didn't sell anything the rest of the year, I would think. By the way, Wallet Hub also calculated the value of the mythical leprechaun's pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. A pot of 1,000 gold coins would amount to $2.16 million. So that's why we chase the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Over $1 million. And by the way, tripping.com has named the best cities to get your green on this St. Patrick's Day. Number one on the list, not Boston. It is Chicago. The river is dyed green. So they rank Chicago number one for St. Patrick's Day. Boston comes in at number two. Philadelphia at number three. Dublin, Ohio, the Columbus suburb, at number four, followed by New York City, New Orleans, and San Diego. So Dublin, Ohio, outranking New York for best places to celebrate St. Patrick's Day this weekend. Kind of interesting. A couple of other items. Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Easter is right around the corner. That's the other thing coming up. And parents might be looking for cheaper alternatives to replace Easter, the classic Easter treats this year. The rising cost of eggs and chocolate means that the holiday comes with a heftier price tag. Bird flu continues to impact egg production due to limited hen supply. Even though the big bird flu outbreak was still a couple of years ago, a lot of birds were destroyed, still limited supply of hens, and so egg prices are still elevated. Last year, some families experimented with decorating potatoes instead of eggs. I don't know how that went over with the kids. Cocoa prices also reached new highs the beginning of this year due to heavy rainfall and flooding in the Ivory Coast and Ghana. The good news is that Peeps now come in four new varieties. So we always have Peeps. We always have Peeps. But that's okay. You know what? We really don't need a lot of candy and sweet treats and all of that for Easter. We really don't need it because we're too big as it is. We were talking about earlier in the week the ongoing battle with Americans' waistlines, and research indicates that the nation's most overweight and obese cities are actually in the southern U.S. Back again to Wallet Hub, they ranked America's 100 most obese cities. Out with that this week. I thought this was kind of interesting. McAllen, Texas, tops the list in terms of the highest percentage of obese adults. McAllen, Texas. 45% of adults in McAllen are obese. And not surprisingly, their population also faces high rates of diabetes and heart disease. Jackson, Mississippi has the highest percentage of obese children under the age of 18. Other cities in Louisiana, Arkansas, Tennessee, and Alabama make up the top 10. Dr. Jeffrey Fisher says invest in nutrition education, investment in nutrition education and promoting healthy eating habits in schools, workplaces, and communities is a must. He said government officials must work with the food industry to encourage the reformulation of products to include more plant-sourced foods. And in case you're curious, Ohio's biggest city in terms of waistline, Ohio's biggest city, Canton, at number 18 on the list, followed closely by Youngstown at number 20. So the most obese cities in the country. Maybe we can skip some of those Easter treats after all. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started here.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Mostly cloudy today, a high around 50. Decreasing clouds tonight, low in the mid-30s. Quite a bit of severe weather blew through Hancock County and surrounding counties on Thursday night. There were two tornado warnings issued by the National Weather Service for Hancock County. One was for a funnel cloud that was sighted between Arlington and Bluffton. Hancock County Sheriff Michael Heldman told WFIN that state troopers and Bluffton police both witnessed funnel clouds in that area. He said some homes were damaged and barns destroyed in the area of County Road 12 and Township Road 29, southwest of Genera. The sheriff said there were no injuries. There were tornado warnings in various counties across Ohio on Thursday night, and the Weather Service will have teams inspect areas of damage to determine if and where tornadoes touch down. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine says schools should consider banning cell phones in the classroom.
The governor held a roundtable in Dublin with educators from all across the state who have tried this policy, and the resounding answer was it works. A phone ban has led to better student engagement, fewer skipped classes, and less bullying.
It's very difficult for an individual teacher to make a decision to ban cell phones in her or his classroom. I think it's much better if it is made at the building level and the district level as well.
I'm Andrew Kinsey.
WTOL 11 Chief Meteorologist Chris Vickers was on with WFIN's Chris Oaks to discuss the upcoming total solar eclipse on April 8th. Finley is within the path of totality, and Vickers says being within full totality is a huge deal.
Because you're able to not only experience the full effect of the eclipse, but you are in a very rare point on Earth where the entire surface of the sun is covered by the moon. That gives you an opportunity to view the sun's corona.
The Solar Eclipse Task Force, a collaboration of many local entities, has created a website with a bunch of useful information about the upcoming eclipse, and we have that linked in the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Obviously, once daylight breaks, it will be a day of cleanup and damage assessment around the area. Hancock County Emergency Management Director Lee Swisher is with us on the line this morning. Obviously, Lee, you did some assessment after the storms, immediately after the storms last night, but a lot more to do today because obviously it was dark, so really not a whole lot of information this morning as to just how extensive the damage from the storms yesterday were. What do we know about how the kind of hit Hancock County took from these storms?
Yesterday we had a couple rounds come through, and we had reports of different funnel clouds or tornadic activity on the ground in different locations. We had first responders trying to verify some of that. Our major area that we know of for sure is kind of southwest corner, south and west of Genera, County Road 29 or County Road 29 area. They had some severe damage down there. Several homes. I think right now we know of at least three, if not four, homes severely damaged, with several barns severely damaged. We actually closed down that road between County Road 12 and 59 due to power poles being snapped and power lines down. We had our power company, Hancock Wood, out there, securing those lines, cutting power in those areas to secure it so everybody was safe. So we went to, our main priority was to check on residences, make sure they were okay first. So we had no report injuries. Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing. So yeah, we're kind of waiting for daybreak and go out and do a better thorough assessment and get with National Weather Service with that as well.
You mentioned that there were some roads that were closed in the immediate aftermath of the storm. Do those roads remain closed this morning for the benefit of those who will be getting up to start the day?
Yeah, as far as I know, that section of 29 is still closed at this time. And the reason for that is so that we had a lot of power lines down kind of across the road. So we wanted to maintain that and give our power companies a chance to work on that as well.
Yeah, obviously.
Those are pretty tight roads.
Yeah. And obviously that's going to be an area to avoid unless you absolutely have to be in that area. Just avoid it altogether. You mentioned that the National Weather Service will come in. They'll actually do the assessment to determine whether or not we did have a tornado, although we've seen images and video that folks have captured that seems to confirm that there was at least one tornado on the ground, but that will officially be determined by the National Weather Service, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. They will confirm that. I mean, obviously, we have pretty good reports and evidence of it.
Yeah.
They'll come in actually grade it, and that's when you hear the EF 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 0. Mm-hmm. So they'll come in and grade that damage and I mean, whether it's tornadic or not, anywhere in the county, damage is damage. So we still want to record that, but we want to verify some of this as well. And it helps us in future storms as well.
Yeah. But the good news here is that we don't have any reports of fatalities or even serious injuries out of this from what we know right now.
Correct.
Obviously not some other parts of the state and the larger region not so lucky. So we actually were pretty fortunate through all of that. And just to sort of recap, I mean, we all heard the sirens go off multiple times yesterday, and everything worked as it was supposed to in terms of logistically during the course of the storms, right?
Absolutely, yep.
Again, Lee Swisher is with us this morning. Just a quick update of what we know and what we don't yet know, what we will learn throughout the course of the day today in the aftermath of yesterday's storms as daylight comes and the cleanup really begins. Lee, we appreciate you taking a couple of moments for us this morning after what I'm sure was a very long evening for you last night. Yeah, Lee, thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
We are joined on the line now by State Representative John Cross, and originally we had planned on discussing the primary election campaign with Election Day coming up next Tuesday, but given everything that transpired yesterday evening with the weather, we have, I don't want to say more important things to talk about. Certainly the election is important, John, but certainly more pressing things to talk about. We were fortunate, as we mentioned, here in Hancock County, even though we did have reports of funnel clouds and apparently at least one tornado on the ground, we escaped the worst of it to our south around Russell's Point, Lakeview, the Indian Lake area, not so lucky. And that obviously is there at the south end of the 83rd District.
Yeah. Good morning, Chris. Yes, we've kind of switched gears and we are focused on our official duties this morning. Last night, like many of us, my wife and children, we went to the basement. We heard the sirens and we knew there was bad weather coming, and we saw one of the tornadoes in southern Hancock County hit. First, we want to offer our prayers and thoughts to all those who are going through this. I mean, you know, for someone that went through a house fire and lost everything, I certainly can understand what people are going through this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Then we heard about Indian Lake, and we immediately got in the car and went down to Indian Lake last night, and it was devastating, just tearful and devastating. And got linked up with the sheriff. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, what did you see? I mean, obviously, a lot more damage assessment will be taking place today when the sun comes up. But what did you witness in the Indian Lake area while you were there?
Well, I've never been through a community that had been hit by a tornado, and it's my first experience. It was pretty shocking. It sadly looked like a bad movie set. And you know, there was destruction everywhere, houses mm-hmm. across the road. Obviously lots of poles down. Lakeview got hit really hard. So when I first got there, Lakeview, just the village right off of the lake, got hit hard. And then Orchard Island, Spend the Day Marina, that also got hit really hard. So mm-hmm. last night they had search and rescue out there. They had the gas, there was active gas lines open and electrical, so they were really working to get that cut off. And the first thing I did was call the governor and the speaker, and we had a brief conversation. He was being briefed by his EMA folks, and I told the governor we're going to head down there, and we just appreciate all the support. He is going to be coming to Indian Lake today. I just got off the phone this morning with the public safety director and got a briefing, and the governor will be coming to Indian Lake here at some point this afternoon, and we'll be joining him to tour the area.
Yeah. Now, as it happens, I'm very familiar with the area. Grew up in Logan County. My wife and I lived at the lake for a number of years, so I'm very familiar with that region. And one of the things that I know is that there are a lot of mobile homes and vacation properties. Yeah. You know. Campers and mobile homes and so on in the area. So obviously those do not go very well when a tornado strikes. So that's going to just contribute to the level of destruction and damage there.
Yeah. It didn't sound so great. And so we're just really hopeful and really hopeful that when they could get in there to get people help. I mean, first off, I also want to thank, my goodness, Chris, the tremendous amount of first responders, nurses, doctors, that we are not short on people helping communities when things go awry. And they actually had this morning at 8 o'clock, they're welcoming back a second shift because they just had so many people show up. So what my focus is going to be is there's a lot of people that can help on the short term. Mm-hmm. But the long-term recovery is what people may forget about weeks after this is over with. But certainly I'm not going to forget. We are going to be there to help rebuild Indian Lake, to help get it back on its feet. We've got to get it open for the summer, and we want people to feel good and excited, and it's going to be a long road to recovery, but we want to be there to make sure the state resources are there to help.
It is certainly a good point. It is a region that depends quite heavily on the tourism in the spring and summer months, and so obviously you're on the cusp of that, so the recovery is, there's going to be some urgency with respect to that, just to protect people's livelihoods. On that note, as we have seen in other areas, even in our area, when there have been widespread damage from natural disasters, this is going to attract a lot of construction companies, roofing companies, and so on, under the auspices of helping people recover. Sometimes that also attracts the not so pleasant side of all of that as well.
Well, that's right. I mean, again, I've been through this in some cases by losing our house and dealing with the insurance companies and how problematic that has been for even us. So we're just going to be a good advocate. Like there's no playbook when you become a legislator. There's no playbook when disaster happens. You're just there. You're there to hug people. You're there to help. You're there to let the sheriff know that the state's here to help. When I talk to the speaker and the governor, it's like, what do you need? You know, it's just about comforting folks. And then the long term is making sure that the state can help, the rebuilding process goes well. You become an advocate and a champion to make sure the constituent has the best interest in all this, because you're absolutely right. The businesses last night are completely shattered. You've lost a lot of businesses over there, and you want them to reopen, and hopefully they can reopen at some point.
Yeah.
So we have our work to do. We have our work cut out for us, but I also don't want to not pay attention to other parts of the state, and even in Hancock County, where there have been unfortunate, I haven't got an update yet if there's houses or barns and destruction there, but whether it's one house or many, you're there to help. And so that's just the, That's what we're here to do.
One, just a couple of quick notes with respect to all of the damage in the Indian Lake region. There may be obviously some folks from our area that have vacation properties or have family and friends in that area.
Sure.
For right now, the best advice is to avoid the area, stay out, and let the rescue and cleanup crews do their work. Yeah. Because it's going to be, you know, one of the other things about that area is a lot of those neighborhoods are out on islands in the lake. It's, you know, limited number of roads to get in and out. And so obviously with debris and damage, it's going to be a while to, you know, just assess, you know, the number of casualties and just how much damage there is, and best to stay out of that area. And I also know that cell phone coverage in the area is very spotty right now as a result of the storm. Yeah. So if you're trying to reach someone, it's going to be kind of hit and miss for a while.
Yeah, I'm here in Kenton now, and you're right, the cell phone service is very spotty over there. Yeah, I just tell people, I know people are probably anxious to get over there and look at things or check things out, but it is very hard to navigate around the lake right now, and it's a very tough to get in and out because it's very few roads in and out. So, you know, hang in there. We certainly will make sure you guys have access to all the information on how to check on people and things like that. But we're going to go get all that information and make sure you guys have that so people can know where their local resources are. The schools, Indian Lake schools, were set up last night to take people in. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they had a lot of people, but there's certainly going to be a lot of resources. And again, if anyone needs anything, to reach out to my office at 614-466-3819. You know, we're certainly going to can help try to cut through any red tape or anything like that. So anything we can do to help. That's what our focus is on here in the next 24, 48 hours.
It is going to be a long road to recovery, to be sure. And again, State Representative John Cross with us this morning with an update of what he witnessed there in the immediate aftermath of the storms in the Indian Lake region last night. Mr. Cross, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris.
Again, kind of playing it by ear this morning with the original rundown for the show, the original schedule, the show. Ty Matthews is with us on the line this morning. Obviously, as we know, he is challenging John Cross for the 83rd district seat in the Ohio House of Representatives. But given everything that has happened with Mother Nature over the past 24 hours, Ty, politics kind of takes a back seat to all of that. I know you also were at the Indian Lake area last night as well, correct?
That is correct.
Talk a little bit about what you witnessed and sort of your reaction to everything that you saw.
Yeah, it is complete and utter destruction down there. It was unlike anything I've ever seen. And, you know, this is the time that we need to focus on people first. You know, politics and everything else, you know, that gets put to the side. I responded. I went down to the Russell's Point right near the Church of God down there where the fire station is. That's where they were taking volunteers for first responders and nurses, anyone with that experience. And the one thing, Chris, that I saw that was, you know, if you could find any shining hope in that situation, was the amount of support mm-hmm. that came from the surrounding communities to respond to that. There was firefighters from Van Wert, you know, Kenton responded. There was tremendous, the amount of help that was there. You know, at one point, they actually had to start turning away people. Hmm. Because there's such an outpouring of support. And this was even during the storm still, you know, it was still raining. People were getting down there, seeing what they could do. And that was truly inspiring to me.
We should also mention that you are an Arlington native, and certainly in the southern part of Hancock County, we had some damage reported. No injuries, thank goodness, that we are aware of, but no casualties, but certainly some damage reported in your general neck of the woods. Everybody with your family and so on, okay?
Yeah, that was pretty close to home there. I know, I believe it was, one was spotted really close to New 30 down near the county line, and mm-hmm. really close to my parents. We're all good. Very, very, I think we are blessed as, you know, a community that there were no injuries here in Hancock. And I'm still praying for the same down in, you know, with the Indian Lake area, that everyone does walk away with no fatalities. You know, I haven't heard anything confirmed yet, but
yeah,
I mean, that should be, as the whole 83rd, the whole state of Ohio, you know, coming together, and our thoughts and prayers should be focused on that this morning.
It really does put everything in perspective. As you were mentioning, you know, kind of politics takes a back seat. And again, like we were saying with John earlier, it's not that this election is not important, but this is certainly something that becomes a much more pressing matter. But it does really put everything in perspective. And I'm curious, from your point of view, given the fact that this is your first foray into an election and seeking elected office, this sort of thing really drives that point home for you.
Yeah, you know, servant leadership has always been my leadership philosophy, you know, and that's serving those that you are the leader of. I met with outside of the fire station last night, Russell Point Mayor Robin Reams, telling her, hey, after March 19th, you know, if I win this nomination, I will start to work on your behalf, you know, the Indian Lake community's behalf, for funding, for whatever we can possibly do to help rebuild not just the structures and the businesses there, but people's lives. Mm-hmm. Now, I cannot imagine what, you know, not only the adults that are going through there today, yep. you know, their business is gone, but these kids, you know, Indian Lake schools were canceled today. And that school is now a shelter. They have running generators because, you know, the power is completely out down there.
Right.
So just looking at this as people first above all else, and that will be my priority going forward.
I do want to talk generally about the election. Obviously, election day is coming up on Tuesday, so this will be the time when voters will have their say. This has been quite an acrimonious campaign, as we mentioned. Both sides have engaged in a lot of tactics that have sought to, I don't want to say demonize the other side, but for lack of a better term, is this the kind of campaign that you expected going in?
Absolutely not to this extent. And I want to be clear with everyone, all these mailers that are going out, if you look at the bottom where it says paid for by, mm-hmm. if it's paid for by Matthews for Ohio, that's coming from my campaign. I cannot coordinate with any other group. That is against the law. I do not agree with these tactics of, you know, I believe they're somewhat gimmicky, of making my opponent look whatever they want him to look like. Mm-hmm. I will say, though, I think a lot of the material that they are producing, the actual words, you know, of what they're accusing him of, many times, oftentimes, it's true. If you Google it, you know, you can Google that information. A lot of times they're hitting them on the blue 22 issue. That's not coming from my campaign, though. Everything yeah. I've told my campaign team, we are not going to run a negative campaign. We are, if there's going to be anything put out, it's going to be a contrast piece where I will put my face on it too. You know, we will stick to the facts. We will not get into lying or, you know, misinformation. And I believe that's what we've seen from my opponent's camp. If you look at the Ohio House Republican Alliance, if it says paid for by that group, there is coordination allowed. I have never voted for Hillary Clinton in my life. I have never said I want to raise your taxes. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, sorry. No, I was going to say there has been some misinformation with respect to that. But one of the things that Ms. Cross has taken exception to in this final week of the campaign was the mailer sent out by the Ohio Associated Builders and Contractors claiming that he voted for HB 205 earlier this year, when in fact the record shows just the opposite. So there has been some misinformation on behalf of both candidates. And again, as you mentioned, this did not come from your campaign per se. But is this something that you can distance yourself from?
Yeah, so I'm never going to defend a group. And like I said, I cannot coordinate with what they put out whatsoever.
Yeah.
That's I want to make that clear. I cannot coordinate and tell a group that they can't put this out or they can put this out. That is against the law. However, what I am saying, the Ohio House Republican Alliance, John can coordinate with them, and he does have a say over that. And I will say, if you look on the commercials on TV, you know, at the end of the negative ad, you'll see John's picture right beside paid for by.
Yeah.
But speaking directly to that mail piece, I have not seen it. I would assume what they are probably alluding to, like I said, I haven't seen it, but they're alluding to the backroom politics, because there was a this didn't go through flawlessly, you know, with the speaker issue with the Blue 22. A lot of this has been stopped. You know, they've been trying to buy time. They've been trying to stall on a lot of these issues because of the deal that they all made with the Democrats.
Again, we don't want to get too deep into the weeds here, because there are certainly more pressing issues this morning, given the weather that went through yesterday and the damage and destruction here in Hancock County throughout the 83rd District. Will you be making future trips back down to Indian Lake as the cleanup begins, now that the sun is up and we can actually see the extent of the damage there?
Yes, I absolutely plan to. A leader once told me in the military, you know, as a leader, you need to be at the points of most friction. You know, where do people need help the most? And, you know, I think there is a overwhelming response in our community that we just need to show up and help. I will say this to everyone. Let the first responders do their job. They're experts. They know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. We don't want to, you know, create more chaos in a situation, right, by more people getting hurt, you know, by, you know, loading up the roads, you know, preventing emergency response teams, right, from getting to location to location. I found this on Facebook. There's a page called the Ohio Emergency Management Agency. They've been putting out pretty solid information on, you know, hey, we are not taking any more volunteers at this point, you know, mm-hmm. And I think that line of communication is extremely important in these situations and crisis moments, that they are able to place manpower where they need and then allocate it where, you know, it may be lacking. So
yeah.
I would urge everyone, including myself, to listen to what the emergency response teams are asking for,
exactly,
instead of just showing up and hoping to help.
Yeah. As we mentioned, more than likely, and I know that there are those in our immediate area that have vacation properties, vacation homes, campers and such at Indian Lake that they enjoy in the spring and summer months. And this is not the time to check on that. There will be time to get to that at an appropriate point in the future. But right now, certainly the focus is on the immediate needs of the individuals in the community. Again, Ty Matthews, thanks very much for taking some time for us this morning. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Chris.
March Madness indeed. Well, if you've been following any of the conference basketball tournaments around the country, in college basketball, there have already been a number of notable upsets. Could shake up the NCAA tournament field when the dust settles. And of course, we're getting close to crowning state champions in high school basketball. The Ottawa Glandorf girls advanced to the state final last night, and the boys will play tonight in the regional finals. Ottawa Glandorf Titans carrying the torch once again for our area in the latter stages of the OHSAA basketball tournament. And of course, the Titans, led by Mr. Basketball finalist and Ohio State commit Colin White. Kahuna from our sister station, 106.3 The Fox, where you can hear all of the Ottawa Glandorf games throughout the season and throughout the postseason. Had a chance to talk with the Titans head coach about the prospects for the regional finals.
an exciting time for Titan fans. You have the Lady Titans in action tomorrow. You guys are in action tomorrow. Boy, it's been, I'm sure, exciting at the school as well.
Yeah, it's just been a, you know, it's a great thing to be part of. Titan Nation is loud and proud right now.
Yeah, I was listening to one of Colin's slam dunks, and not only did it light up Jason and Tom, but the crowd, you can hear the crowd go crazy, man. Titan Nation were representing on Wednesday night for sure.
Oh, man, that was it was a great atmosphere, and, you know, we needed every single one of them. And, you know, it's one of those things. Colin's such a fantastic player, and it's just, you know, I just talked to our superintendent about this. You know, it's one of those things that, like, it's almost that our fans have gotten used to it.
Yeah.
You know, it's the norm. And, you know, I'd like to say that's not the norm.
Right.
And, you know, we're just very blessed to have somebody like that to represent us, to do the things that he does on and off the court. And, you know, some of those plays, you know, it's going to be a long time before we see somebody in blue and gold be able to do that.
Well, speaking of course, this week it was announced the folks who are going to possibly be selected as Mr. Basketball, Colin, getting, I don't know what you call it, a nomination. What do you call that?
Yeah, I think it's down to they give 8 candidates for the award. And, you know, he was nominated as one of those 8. And, you know, that in itself is just a fantastic honor. You know, as far as I know, I don't think anybody from Putnam County has ever been in that category, you know, so it's just another feather in his cap. But I can guarantee you one thing, in Colin's mind, he'll trade that in a heartbeat, you know, for the Titans to get another win.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it is a team sport, as you mentioned, and the Titans going up in the regional finals. Again, that game at the Stroh Center up at BGSU. What can you expect, or what can Titan fans expect from, is it Margaretta? Is that how you say it? I don't know how you say that exactly.
I say it Margaretta. That's what I'm going with. You know, at this point, it's just whoever's out there, that's who we're going to play.
Yeah, you
know, we don't care.
Right.
You know, we're just thankful to see another day. And, you know, they're very talented. They're very young. You know, I think their best basketball is, you know, still to come. They started, you know, multiple sophomores. I think they throw a freshman in there. You know, but they're playing with a lot of confidence right now, and that's a dangerous team. So, you know, you're in the regional final. You know, it's one step next to, you know, the dream of, you know, being able to play in the state tournament, and our guys understand that. So, you know, the pressure, the magnitude of the game is there, but, you know, hopefully some of our experience and, you know, we can lean heavily on that, and we can get out of there with a win.
Well, we're hoping last weekend, I think you guys called it on the text, I saw a championship weekend. Let's hopefully this is another championship weekend. You've got the guys going up for the regional title, and then tomorrow, of course, also the Lady Titans competing for a state final. Again, we certainly wish both you and Coach Yant and the Lady Titans the best of luck. This would be a great weekend for Titan fans, huh?
This would be one to remember. I hope I hope we have an opportunity to pick up a lot of trash and a lot of toilet paper around Main Street.
Well, the Carriot, I'm sure, is prepared. So,
well, the Carriots, they told me that they're more than willing to go out there and clean it up for everybody since we've been paying their bills.
Well, Coach, again, best of luck tomorrow in the regional finals. Go Titan.
Go Titans.
Again, the Titans will play Margaretta tomorrow afternoon, 1 o'clock from BGSU. You'll hear coverage on our sister station, 106.3 The Fox. And, of course, the Lady Titans playing for a state title this weekend as well.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oaks on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
The Pittsburgh Penguins are actually in the broken news this morning. Apparently, a shipment of bobbleheads was stolen after it arrived there from California. The shipment was carrying Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads that were going to be handed out to fans at their game. What was it, last night or tonight? I don't know. Anyway, it was supposed to be Jaromir Jagr bobblehead night. And unfortunately, the game against the San Jose Sharks bobblehead night had to be canceled because the bobbleheads were stolen. The team said they have ordered replacements and they will reschedule bobblehead night for a later date. The Penguins said the investigation is ongoing. who would steal is like 18,000 bobbleheads of Jaromir Jagr. You know, yesterday we had in the broken news the guys that stole what $200 worth of or $2,000 worth of Bounty paper towels. This is right up there with that. I don't know if it tops the Bounty paper towels theft, but this is right up there. What are you going to do with 18,000 Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads? I mean, you're going to give them to your friends? You're going to sell them online? What is it? Somebody comes up to you on the street. Hey, want to buy a Jaromir Jagr bobblehead? You know, it's probably hot. That's crazy. I wonder if the thieves knew what they were stealing or whether they got their haul, opened up the boxes only to find all of these bobbleheads. I would love to see the look on their face when they discovered that's what they had made off with. But oh, my goodness. Elsewhere in the broken news this morning, a 7-Eleven, this is a robbery that just seemed too simple. A 7-Eleven employee in Naples, Florida, has been accused of taking $25,000 from his store and then leaving on a Greyhound bus. Todd J. Domer reportedly had access to the safe as part of his job, and so he helped himself. He disconnected security cameras. This is what he's accused of. He disconnected security cameras and then made off with the cash, went on over to the bus station, and took off. Mr. Donner was intercepted by officials in Tampa after his bus ride. A substantial portion of the cash was recovered, according to the Naples Police Department. Mr. Domer has been charged with grand theft, and presumably he is now out of a job. Presumably. It's not in the report, but I think I'm safe to assume that when he gets out, he'll be looking for new employment. Elsewhere, the broken news. A student pilot in Northern Virginia is facing charges after allegedly trying to break into the cockpit of a commercial airliner. 19-year-old Nathan Jones was arrested earlier this month and charged with interfering with a flight crew. Witnesses say Mr. Jones made three separate attempts to enter the cockpit of an Alaska Airlines flight from San Diego to Dulles International Airport. When asked what he was doing, Mr. Jones reportedly told flight attendants he was testing them. He was testing them! His lawyer plans to ask for a mental evaluation, saying Mr. Jones had been placed on suicide watch by his jailers in Alexandria. He faces up to 20 years in prison if convicted. And again, the story doesn't say this, but I'm guessing he probably really hurt his chances of actually getting his pilot's license. He's a student pilot. I don't think he'll actually be graduating his flight school after that. Again, that's just a guess, but I feel pretty comfortable in making that assumption. From the international file, the broken news this morning, a suspected drunk driver in the UK was asked to take a breathalyzer test, but had some trouble performing the task. I mean, I don't know if you've ever taken a breathalyzer. I have not, but I know basically how it works. You blow on the straw into the machine, and then that registers your blood alcohol content. But it's a straw, and that's not usually what you do with a straw. You usually don't blow. You suck on a straw in your drink or what have you. And that's what tripped this guy up. Officers said that they could smell alcohol on Mr. Campbell's breath. Tracy Campbell, his name. They could smell alcohol in his breath, and they asked him or her. I guess it's a her. They asked her to give a breath sample. Ms. Campbell struggled because she was sucking on the straw instead of blowing into the machine, and reportedly asked officers, "Am I blowing in or out?" "How do you blow in? That's impossible," she said. Finally, she successfully gave a sample that was four times the legal limit she has been disqualified for driving for the next 2 years. And disqualified from using a straw for the next 2 years, I would imagine, too. I can see where that would be difficult. Because, you know, that's not what you normally do when you use a straw. Anyway. And finally, in the broken news, and again, here is one of those stories. Generally speaking, as a rule of thumb, stories where people die are excluded from the broken news because it's not really funny when people die. It's a tragedy when someone loses their life, certainly. But sometimes the circumstances are just so bizarre that you have to make an exception to the rule. And here we have the case of a 59-year-old man. The only name is given is Eck. E-K, Eck. Mr. Eck, we'll call him. 59 years old, who reportedly caused a scene in a Buddhist temple in Thailand and then was, in a strange twist of fate, impaled by a Buddha statue. Impaled by Buddha. Mr. Eck was apparently under the influence of something when the incident occurred. Oh, it says he was under the influence of methamphetamines when the incident occurred. He allegedly attacked a monk and smashed several statues, locked himself in the temple. When police arrived and forced open the door, they found that Mr. Eck had been impaled by one of the Buddha statues. Again, I try not to laugh, but he was impaled by Buddha. That seems very odd. Investigators believe that Mr. Eck tried to climb the largest statue in the temple, fell, and landed on top of the statue that impaled him. Interestingly, as a postscript to the story, it says here, the monk who gave Mr. Eck the meth that he had been high on has since left the monkhood. I would think so. That's, the monk gave him the meth. So yeah, he's no longer a monk. And Mr. Eck is simply no longer. There you go. That is today's broken news report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Do you know an exceptional teacher who's made a positive impact in your life or the life of a student? It's time to shine a bright spotlight on these educational heroes with the Findlay Rotary Golden Apple Awards. Nominate your favorite teacher from Findlay or Hancock County online at findlayrotary.org before April 5th. Nominate an outstanding educator for the Golden Apple Awards. Make a difference. Honor a teacher by visiting findlayrotary.org today. This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. It's been well documented how social media has changed our lives and in many cases, not for the better. Concerns over its impact on mental health and self-awareness, especially among young people. People just these days feel inadequate because of what they see other people sharing on social media, even though social media doesn't always give us an accurate picture of other people's lives. We don't tend to share the worst of us, the worst of ourselves on social media. So we get a bit of a skewed view of our friends and our relatives on social media. But nonetheless, it can impact our own feeling of self-worth. And there is a new term that has emerged from this called money dysmorphia. It is a term used to describe the distorted view of one's finances that we get largely from what we see and read on social media. And apparently 29% of Americans experience this money dysmorphia. One quarter of consumers feel less satisfied with the amount of money that they have because of the lives they see other people supposedly living online. You know, people brag about their new houses, their new cars, their new clothes, you know, all of the, you know, great things that they have. And we think why don't we have this? Why are they more financially successful than we are? And again, we have to keep in mind that you know, it's not always what it seems, what it appears to be on social media, but 1 in 4 consumers feel less satisfied with the amount of money they have because of what they've seen on social media. According to Credit Karma, money dysmorphia is even more prevalent among younger generations, not surprisingly. Roughly 43% of Gen Zers and 41% of millennials struggle with comparisons to others and feel behind financially. And it's probably not helping any that we hear these reports that compared to previous generations, many of these younger adults are in fact behind where previous generations were financially. So there is some reality to that, but it's exacerbated by, you know, this grass is always greener on the other side of the fence kind of thing that we've got going on. Experts say you can address this if this sounds like you, sounds like something that you've struggled with. Experts say you can address it by spending less time on social media and remove any payment details stored online to help create purchase hurdles, which force you to think through your buying decisions. Because some of this is because we are spending too much of our money, again, online shopping, and it's so easy to do that that sometimes it can leave us in a financial bind. And again, there is some reality behind that. But really interesting, this story on money dysmorphia that is just one more effect of social media and the impact that it has on our lives and on our well-being. We'll end things on a bit of a lighter note here this morning. My wife, Kyra, has joined us in the studio with a special collection of recipes. These are viral TikTok recipes this morning. So it's kind of a get them before they're gone kind of thing. Because if it, you end up banning TikTok...
Well, somebody will figure it out.
Somebody will figure it out. But these are recipes that you culled from the from TikTok videos. Yeah. And so they're all really easy.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously.
Yes.
Because it's not like you can get into a real detailed recipe on, on TikTok in a short form video platform. But there are some really good ones here.
Yeah.
And we first have a viral TikTok spaghetti Alfredo recipe.
Yes. So all this is a bake. So 1 pound of spaghetti, 1 pound of ground beef, 1 pound of Italian sausage, 1 jar of marinara sauce, a quarter teaspoon garlic powder, quarter teaspoon onion powder, salt and pepper to taste, 1 jar of your favorite Alfredo sauce, and 2 to 3 cups of shredded mozzarella. So fill a stock pan with water, add some salt, bring to a boil, preheat the oven for 375 degrees. Once the water's boiling, add in the pasta and cook for about 10 minutes. Then after it's cooked, drain the water, add some olive oil and mix up the noodles and set that aside. That kind of keeps the noodles from sticking together.
Okay.
So then...
Very important.
Yep. Brown the meat in pan, in your pan, drain off the grease and add the pepper, garlic powder, and onion powder. Pour in the spaghetti sauce and bring your meat to a boil. Reduce your heat and let it simmer for about 10 minutes or so, stirring occasionally. While that is simmering, then spray a 9x13-inch pan with a nonstick cooking spray. Add the noodles, top with the Alfredo sauce, then add your meat sauce, top the whole dish with mozzarella cheese. Bake in the oven for about 20 minutes until the cheese is melted and bubbly. Take out of the oven and let it sit for about 5 minutes and then enjoy.
Okay.
So really easy.
Yeah, an easy easy recipe for a spaghetti Alfredo from folks at TikTok.
Yes.
You also have a recipe. Now this...
You and
this,
me.
No, this does not sound appetizing to
me
at all because I am not a pickle person.
I love pickles.
But... If you are,
yes.
Perhaps you will be interested in the cheese-wrapped pickles.
Yes.
Really? Cheese-wrapped pickles.
Yes. Yes.
All right.
Yes. It's really good.
If you say
I like pickles.
I'm not a pickle person. So.
Yes. And this is a nice, friendly keto snack also. So okay. No carbs.
All right.
So
very good.
Dill pickle spears, cheese slice, preferably provolone. I ended up using...
so you did this?
Yes.
See, I didn't even know that she did this. This is how much I dislike pickles is that she hid it from me.
Yeah. Yeah. You were gone. So you were probably at soccer. So
doing something else.
Yes. Okay. I did mozzarella.
Okay.
So, and then, your ranch dressing, if you want, you don't have to have the ranch dressing. That's just,
but that's dipping. A dip. Yeah.
It's a dipping.
All right.
So heat a tiny amount of oil in a skillet over medium heat. Place your cheese slice in the pan. Let it cook until it's gooey in the center and a crisp golden edges. So
probably won't take long, I wouldn't think.
No, because it's thin. Right. So add your dill pickle spear to the center of the melted cheese with tongs. I ended up kind of using a fork is what I used.
To fold it around,
to wrap it.
And I would imagine that's why it's important to for it to be a little crispy at the edges, because otherwise that wouldn't be very easy.
So cheese around the pickle and remove from the heat. Place on a paper towel to drain excess oil. Allow the cheese crisps to cool for a little bit longer. Crisp up and then cool, and then serve with ranch dressing or enjoy the pickle as is.
Simple as that for cheese wrapped pickles.
Yes.
All right. Now this is more
actually really good.
This is more my speed. This is an icebox cake with Oreos.
Yes.
An icebox cake.
Yes.
With Oreos.
So it's it's like ice cream.
Okay.
Yep. It has an ice cream consistency.
It doesn't have ice cream in it, but it has that consistency.
Correct.
Okay, got it.
So 1 pound of fresh strawberries, 1 14-ounce can of sweetened condensed milk, 1 tablespoon of lemon juice, 1 8-ounce tub of your favorite whipped topping divided, 8 Oreos crushed, and 2 tablespoons of butter melted. So line a loaf pan, like your bread loaf pan, with aluminum foil, and you'll want to completely line it and go outside of it.
Even the edges.
What you're going to do is you're going to lift it up and out after it's all done.
Using the aluminum foil, obviously.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
So add a can of sweetened condensed milk, lemon juice, and half of your whipped topping to your strawberries. Mix well. Pour your mixture into the prepared pan. Add melted butter to your crushed Oreos in a separate bowl, mix that well. Sprinkle your Oreos in the pan on top of your strawberry mixture.
Mm-hmm.
So then cover your icebox cake with the foil and freeze for at least 4 hours, if not overnight. Remove the cake from the pan by inverting onto a plate and frost with the rest of your remaining whipped cream.
Okay.
So completely frost it. Mm-hmm. And then you could drizzle some more strawberries on top, or the Oreos, or some Hershey syrup or whatever, kind of
anything
however
like
you want to do it.
Okay.
And then slice and serve.
Simple as that.
Yes, really simple.
Yeah, the icebox cake with the Oreos, the cheese-wrapped pickles, and the viral TikTok spaghetti Alfredo recipes are all posted at the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, at Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook, which is kind of ironic that we're putting the TikTok recipes on Facebook.
Oh, there are so many TikTok recipes. I don't really have TikTok. I have Facebook, but there's so many of the...
Yeah. And a lot of those pop up on either side.
Yeah, they pop up on Facebook. So
those recipes are posted on the Facebook page, on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page.
Yep.
And if you have a favorite recipe, maybe it's one of your own, it's one that you have come across on social media, TikTok or Facebook, whatever.
Instagram, any of those.
Feel free to share those with the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page. And who knows, yours could be featured on the program. If similarly, if there is a recipe you are looking for, especially with Easter coming up,
yes.
Something that you're looking for, by all means, let us know.
Yeah, some nice Easter ideas would be awesome.
We will get Kyra on the case.
Yes.
Well, so we'll put out a request. We'll put out a request for Easter ideas. If there's something that you have for Easter, your family Easter, that is a tradition and you'd like to share the recipe, we would love to have it. So
yes, please.
At Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook. And of course, the link is up there at goodmornings.net as well. My wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will put a wrap on our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the program at our webpage. Go to goodmornings.net. Coming up Monday morning on the program, the Affordable Care Act was supposed to fix the healthcare problem in this country, but the pain of medical debt is as acute as ever, and only likely to get worse as premiums, deductibles, and copayment thresholds continue to go up. Is there any fix? So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.